Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 13th, 2025. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Champaign School Board, Superintendents, Supporters Speak Up. Members vote to request proposals from executive search firms. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio. That's J-E-F-F, last name D'Alessio. You can reach him at J-D'Alessio at newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. For the first time in her nearly 4 years as Unit 4 Superintendent, Sheila Boozer, that's Sheila. Is that right? S-H-E-L-I-A, or Shelia Boozer, B-O-O-Z-E-R, didn't have her regular speaking role at Monday's school board meeting. But audience members had plenty to say on behalf of Champaign School's embattled leader. Inside a packed meeting room at the Mellon Administrative Center, a wave of community members, some repeat visitors, some newcomers, stepped up to the microphone to call on a board with 5 new members to slow down just a little bit. As Centennial High School Principal Sarah Sanders said regarding talk of Boozer's eventual exit as superintendent. Others put it more harshly. 78% of my property tax bill goes to Unit 4. And you, as a board, are wasting my money, said Joan Dixon, retired president and CEO of the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois. Without naming names, Dixon called out new members Tony Bruno and Christy Arnold, saying she intentionally did not vote for candidates who said they planned to oust Boozer as superintendent. That's not appropriate, Dixon said. What do you know? On and on it went, well beyond the 30 minutes carved out for the first round of public comments, and that was after Bruno expedited the process by waiving the long-standing procedure of those wishing to speak, filling out comment cards, turning them in, and then waiting for their names to be called. I want it to be easier for people to make public comment, not harder, Bruno said. Some speakers called attention to the new layout of the meeting room, one that had Boozer sitting away from board members with her back facing public commenters. Dr. Boozer will be respected, Jacqueline Miner said. Sis, you are an amazing woman, Verdell Jones Jr. told Boozer. Jennifer Enoch, E-N-O-C-H, chastised board members for the inappropriate removal from the agenda, the superintendent's report, typically an upbeat slideshow that starts with It's a Great Day in Unit 4, and covers district highlights since the last meeting, from athletic achievements and avid updates to educators who'd been named the News Gazette's Teacher of the Week. It's not known how long Boozer will remain Unit 4 superintendent, only that it won't be beyond the end of the next school year. The children. This is in bold. As was teased during Friday night's raucous swearing-in of the new board, members were asked to vote on a request for proposals from executive search firms interested in helping Unit 4 choose Boozer's successor. It's a necessary step, Board Secretary Amy Armstrong said, given that it's at least a year, if not more, process from issuing the RFP to hiring a superintendent. I've been through 2 CEO searches for the district, Armstrong said. They take a very long time to execute. According to a timeline attached to the agenda item, the board hopes to know who will succeed Boozer as superintendent by January 2026. At which point the selected candidate begins working with current superintendent to ensure an orderly transition well ahead of the July 1st, 2026 start date. This has nothing to do with ending Dr. Boozer's contract early, Grace Kang asked. This is simply to hire a firm to start the search for 2026? Correct, she was told. Kang joined 5 others in voting for issuing an RFP that Bruno pointed out is yet to be written and will be handled by district staff. Board newcomer Justin Michael Hendricks was the lone no vote, preceding it by raising a series of questions, among them, how will the search firm be utilized? Will board attorneys be involved? asking for more documentation on past superintendent searches and expressing concern about how others might be impacted. My focus is not just Boozer, but Boozer's team, Hendricks said, as well as the children, the children, the children, he repeated 5 times. The previous board's lack of action to extend Boozer's contract before the end of the school year triggered a clause that allows this board to terminate her contract without cause anytime after May 1st, 2025. According to the 2-year extension Boozer was given in the summer of 2024, the board must give a minimum of 60 days written notice before ending her tenure. We need answers. That's a title, we need answers. At the start of Monday's meeting, the board emerged from executive session with a report. There will be another meeting on Thursday, the board's third get-together in 6 days to deal with appointments. What that means to Centennial Associate Principal Cecily Thomas's candidacy as Booker T. Washington principal remained the unanswered question of the night. Sanders, Centennial's principal, became the latest of dozens of speakers over the past 6 weeks to express her high opinion of her associate principal, noting that she'd be losing a lot by championing Thomas for Booker T. Washington, or BTW. The principal appointments of Thomas at BTW and Cynthia Watson at Edison Middle School were removed Friday from Monday's agenda, which speakers on both nights criticized. Joining the chorus Monday, BTW teacher Sarita Palmer, who informed the room, "I am Booker T. Washington's only kindergarten teacher. That can't happen this year." Palmer said candidates she has interviewed for jobs at BTW always have the same unanswerable questions. "We need answers, starting with who's going to be in charge of our school," Palmer said. During the evening's shorter second public comment period, Thomas also spoke, asking board members how, if they don't have enough information to reach a decision on her future, can they be so certain about Boozer's? Turning toward Boozer, a mentor, she said, "I wanted so badly to be the superintendent of my district. And now I know, because of what you've gone through, I absolutely do not want to be a black woman superintendent in Champaign schools." And that's the end of the article. There is two photographs, that accompany this article. One is of a large room full of people sitting at the meeting, and on the wall it says, "Together we can accomplish great things," written on the wall, ironically. And the caption of that photo reads, "Audience members had plenty of comments for Unit 4 school board members at Monday's meeting at the Mellon Building in Champaign." That photo was taken by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. And another photo taken by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette is a photo of a black woman, 30s, 40s, I'd say, looking on. And that caption reads, "Superintendent Shelia, Boozer, attends Monday's Unit 4 school board meeting at the Mellon Building in Champaign." The next headline reads, it's actually a photograph outside of a young kid using a saw, doing some woodworking. The caption reads, "What's cool in school? Muhammad Seymour Junior High, a cut above." The caption reads, "Muhammad Seymour sixth grader Langley Knox operates a cutoff saw as volunteer Kurt Mitchum supervises during a build day partnership with the Muhammad chapter of Sleep in Heavenly Peace. A total of 60 sixth graders spent more than 4 hours Monday to help build bed frames in the courtyard of the junior high to donate to children in the community. The project was made possible by a $1,000 Illinois Education Association Foundation grant obtained by science teacher Jennifer Smith, who described the experience as awesome for everyone. It definitely was worth it." Happy details at newsgazette.com and in Wednesday's Top of the Morning. So more tomorrow. That photo again is taken by Robin Scholes, S-C-H-O-L-Z, of the News Gazette. Next up, Shozo Sato, A Life Remembered. That's Shozo, S-H-O-Z-O, last name Sato, S-A-T-O, A Life Remembered. He walked the walk, so to speak. In today's Town Hall section, editor Jeff D'Alessio asked admirers of late Japan House founder Shozo Sato to share their favorite stories of the local artist, director, and author. Here's one from Lindsay Stierick, S-T-I-R-E-K, Assistant Director of Academic Programming at Japan House. Shozo Sato is known by so many of his students, colleagues, and friends as a deeply philosophical and profound, serious thinker, and he certainly was. However, my favorite side of him, and what I will remember, is without a doubt his playfulness. Here's one story that is rather special to me. I was at Costco and saw a sushi-shaped squishmallow, one of those big, very soft plushies that were super popular for a while, and when I checked the tag, I saw that its name was Shozo. Of course, I bought it to give to him as a joke, fully expecting him to be rather unimpressed. But when I gave it to him, he had a rather different reaction than I expected. He seemed delighted, hugged it earnestly, and kept it sitting next to him the rest of the day, occasionally patting it on the head or acting as if he were talking to Shozo, the squishmallow, rather than addressing him. As if we were talking to Shozo, the squishmallow. I'm not sure if he was humoring me or just like the plushie, but either way, it really exemplified how he embodied the wonder-filled, lighthearted spirit that is so often touted as an ideal for which we should strive in the Japanese way of tea, which is among the many arts he taught. He was not just talking the talk, he walked the walk, so to speak. Even though I knew him far fewer years than most of his students and friends, he lived so dynamically and fully and shared so much of his knowledge, experience, and passion for life that I feel like I gained a lifetime of stories from him, and I'm proud and grateful to count him among the several great teachers who guided my artistic and academic career and influenced who I am as a person. And there's a photo of a woman and an elderly Japanese man sitting on tatami mats in the Japan House, and the caption reads, Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, Stierick, S-T-I-R-E-K, and Shozo Sato, and that photo is provided by the Japan House. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso, J-I-M-R-O-S-S-O-W, a nationally known muralist, Portland, Maine-based Ryan Adams, R-Y-A-N, Adams, is excited to try his talented hands at something new starting today in Champaign. For the next 2+ weeks, he will add color and a message on 8,400 square feet at the popular basketball courts at Douglas Park. This is a first for me, he said. I've painted street murals before, but a court is much different. I'm beyond excited. He's been planning his Unite, Do Right mural for almost a year. It pays tribute to Frederick Douglass. I would unite with anybody to do right and with nobody to do wrong, quote unquote from Frederick Douglass, and is a part of the Champaign County African American Heritage Trail. The significance of a court within a community is huge, he said, not only as a gathering place and common ground for people from all walks of life, but it is also a place where people can find love for their sport, refine their skills through dedication and practice, and really become an integral part of their lives. We'll have more on Adams and his work as the project takes shape. I hope that people feel like they have something special and unique in their neighborhood, a one-of-one piece that brings a vibrant life to the park created just for them, he said. I hope that gives people pride in their neighborhood, and upon spending time with it, that they dig into the meaning behind the piece and the remarkable life and work of Frederick Douglass. And there's a picture of a basketball court in the distance. There's a fence at the foreground of this photo, and it says basketball court mural painting in progress. There's a sign, Champaign Park District, and there's a photo of Ryan Adams, African-American male, probably in his 30s, with a baseball cap and smiling for the camera. And those photos are provided by Adams and Jim Rosso of the News Gazette. So hopefully the News Gazette will publish a photo of the finished piece coming in a few weeks. Next up, history. Area history. In 1925, if a tornado, like the one that struck southern Illinois in March, was to pass over Urbana, Every school building would be wrecked with the exception of the high school, was the conclusion of Professor Williams of the University of Illinois during a presentation about the Murfreesboro tornado before the Association of Commerce. He said had they been properly constructed, they could withstand such a storm. In 1975, following a 10-week investigation of missing Champaign Park District funds, former park superintendent Jack D. White was indicted on 269 counts by a Champaign County grand jury. The missing funds reportedly total about $32,000. That was from 1975. And in 2010, in light of furloughs, layoffs, tuition increases, and program cuts, a 37% increase in the University of Illinois president's salary didn't exactly go over well on campus. Reaction was swift to the news that Michael Hogan, the incoming U of I president, will receive a base salary of $620,000 a year plus $225,000 in deferred compensation after 5 years. That was in 2010. And in international history, today's highlight, on May 13, 1846, the United States Congress formally declared war against Mexico, following battles along the disputed U.S.-Mexico border in the preceding weeks. The Mexican-American War would continue for nearly 2 years until the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in February of 1848. The next headline reads, Friday shooting. Coroner IDs two dead in apparent murder-suicide in Danville. This article is written by Jana, J-A-N-A, Wiersema, W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A, and is based out of Danville. She can be reached at J-W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A@newsgazette.com. The Vermilion County Coroner's Office has released the names of two Danville residents who died in a Friday night shooting in that city. Coroner Jane McFadden said William J. Rudy, 67, and Lacey K. Williams, 32, died in the incident. She said autopsies on both were performed Sunday and results are still pending. Danville police said officers were initially called at 5:57 p.m. to the 200 block of Grace Street for a report of shots fired. Upon arrival, they found Mrs. Williams in the front yard with gunshot wounds. She was taken to a local hospital where she was later pronounced dead. According to Deputy Chief Joshua Webb, witnesses told police they heard gunshots and then saw a man standing next to Mrs. Williams holding a gun who then went inside a house. Police said they attempted to make contact with him but weren't able to do so. The emergency response unit later entered the home and found Mr. Rudy dead of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. Danville police and the coroner's office are still investigating the matter, and anyone with information is encouraged to contact police at the following phone number, 217-431-2250. That's 217-431-2250. The next headline reads, Champaign City Council, street designation honoring late U of I dean to be discussed. This article is also written by Jana Wiersema and is based out of Champaign. A University of Illinois administrator who brought over 500 African-American students to campus in 1968, that's alone, in 1968, is being considered for a local honor. The city of Champaign has received two requests to create an honorary Dean Clarence Shelley Way, one from U of I Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs Danita Brown Young, and one from Shelley's wife, Sharon Ormsby Shelley, and daughter, Pamela Elise Shelley. Dean Shelley, that's S-H-E-L-L-E-Y, Dean Shelley was the kind of person people turned to when they needed wisdom, a kind word, a helping hand, or the courage to drive change, Young said. Words cannot express how deeply grateful the university is that he chose to share his passion and gifts with countless students, faculty, and staff members here. The proposed designation is for John Street, J-O-H-N Street, between 6th and Wright Streets. This location holds deep significance for our family, representing a pivotal chapter in his life and career at the University of Illinois, Shelley's wife and daughter wrote in their application. Clarence Shelley's first office with the U of I was located at 610 East John Street in what is now the Turner Student Services Building, while his final office was at 601 East John Street, which is now the Swanland Administration Building. Shelley joined the university in 1968 to run the Special Education Opportunities Program, also known as Project 500, which was the first extensive effort by the university to offer equal educational opportunities for all the residents of Illinois, according to U of I officials. As of 1967, fewer than 400 university students were Black out of a population of about 30,400, according to the Champaign County African American Heritage Trail. Shelley recruited over 500 African American students to the program and was later named Dean of Students in 1974, U of I officials said. Subsequent roles included Assistant Vice Chancellor, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, and Special Assistant to the Chancellor. He was awarded the Chancellor's Medallion in 2002. Clarence Shelley was recognized by community members and university officials as someone whose communication style and collaborative spirit brought individuals together from all parts of the greater community to solve problems and make a positive difference for all, his wife and daughter wrote. In addition to his work with the university, Shelley was also greatly involved in the local community. Among other things, he was a deacon at McKinley Memorial Presbyterian Church, sponsored cultural and charitable projects, was involved with William F. Ernest, American Legion Post 559, and served as a committed mentor to countless young men in the community, quote unquote. He died January 17, 2022, at the age of 90. Several individuals penned letters supporting the honorary Dean Clarence Shelley Way designation, including Project 500 students Nathaniel Banks and Patricia McKinney Lewis. Lewis, who a retired Champaign School District administrator, wrote that Shelley was a guiding light, quote unquote, and without his support, many students, quote unquote, would have given up and transferred to other universities. Dean Shelley wanted us to be successful, she said. We knew that he was the go-to person when we were having difficulty with classes or surviving in a cold climate, where many other students and professors were of the opinion that we didn't deserve to attend the flagship university of the state of Illinois. She noted that while he was promoted to other positions, Dean Shelley is a term of endearment due to his impact on students. Banks, now a retired U of I employee, wrote that the university was not merely Shelley's place of employment, but also the vehicle for him to fulfill his purpose of supporting students, faculty, and staff as his life's mission. For that and many other reasons, too numerous for me to mention in this correspondence, I enthusiastically and wholeheartedly support naming the section of John Street Clarence Shelley Way, he said. It has been his street unofficially for many years. Now it can be official. Bruce Knight, who serves as the city's planning director, also wrote a letter supporting the designation. With Shelley's passing, I believe that it is important to maintain the visibility of what he stood for, especially in today's environment, where respect for our fellow man is in short supply, he said. The city council will discuss the honorary street designation for Shelley at a study session on Tuesday. If at least 5 members are supportive, it will be put on a regular meeting agenda for a vote. Per city policy, there is a limit of 4 honorary street designations per year, not including those that honor a city employee who lost their life on the job. The council previously voted in April to designate Walnut Street between North Street and Columbia Avenue as honorary Patricia Avery Neal Way to recognize the local community leader and trailblazer. And there's a photograph of an older African-American gentleman, I guess maybe in his 50s or 60s, bald in a suit and tie, standing in front of a window. And that is Shelley. So we'll see if that will happen. Stay tuned. The next headline reads, Vermilion County Board Clerk retiring in July. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey, who can be reached at jbailey@newsgazette.com. Vermilion County Clerk Kathy, with a C, Jenkins, is retiring as of July 1st. The Vermilion County Board is expected to declare a vacancy in Jenkins' seat at its meeting tonight. Jenkins has served as clerk since 2014 and was most recently elected in 2022. Jenkins, a Georgetown Republican, stated at the time that she was running for her last term. Jenkins became clerk on December 1st, 2014, and she said at that time that there were three specific things she wanted to accomplish: increase salaries and technology and cross-train staff. One of her goals was to have additional documents through her office online for public information. In addition to upgrading technology, Jenkins previously said she'd cross-trained employees and increased employee wages while holding the bottom line on her budget. With improved technology, we didn't have to replace staffing as they left and went from 10 full-time positions to 6 currently. We were able to scan all of our old documents so that everything would be available indefinitely. We expanded our services online so that customers could obtain birth, death, and marriage licenses without having to come into the office, she said. The next headline reads, Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County nonprofit receives $20,000 grant for food pantries. This article is written by Dave Hinton, who can be reached at dhinton@newsgazette.com, and the article is based out of Rantoul. A Rantoul-based social services agency was one of 10 in the state selected to receive a $20,000 charitable trust grant from State Treasurer Mike Frerichs' office. That's Mike, last name Frerichs, F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S. Cindy Crawford, executive director of the Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County, said the grant is welcome as her agency has seen the use of its food pantries climb. We have seen an increase in the number of people seeking help due to the inflationary forces that are affecting the economy, she said. Her agency operates 2 food pantries, one for all Champaign County residents and one for students at Rantoul Township High School. We see well over 500 families a month, Crawford said. We had 110 visits last month, just from our high school students. Community Service Center sought the grant money to buy food for those with special dietary needs, as well as health and beauty aids and household items. And as a quick announcement, starting July 1st, 2025, the library has new hours of operation. Monday through Thursday, it will operate from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And Sunday, it will be closed. So this is the Tolono Public Library District. I think that's a slight reduction in their hours of service. They can be reached at 217-485-5558. Again, their phone number is 217-485-5558, and they are located at 111 East Main Street in Tolono. I guess the big takeaway from this is that don't go to the library on Sunday because it will now be closed. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 13th, 2025. It's always a pleasure to read with you. I'll be back shortly with part two of the News Gazette for this date, so please stay with me. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful week.